tech we trust, because if you can't trust technology, what else can you?
Hello, this is In Tech We Trust podcast on the road live from Seattle at DockerCon, and I'm joined on my left by Amy Lewis.
Hello, how are you?
Very good, thank you. Further to the left, Chris Evans.
Hey now.
No, there's only one person who does that. And not Ed Grinson, but his lookalike, Julian Wood.
Hello, Captain Haddock, how are you?
I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, so here we go. We're at DockerCon in Seattle. I've been to a DockerCon before, but the three guys who've joined me have not. So I thought what we'd do is we'd talk about what their impressions of the event are first, and then we talk about some of the announcements and what we think the impact will be on the ecosystem and things like that. So I'm actually literally going to go from left around to right. So I'm going to start with you, Amy. Well, actually, Amy, you've not been on the podcast before. You guys probably both have. Oh, I'll tell you what, we'll all do some quick intros as well. So before you tell us about what you think about the event, just a quick intro, like where you are on Twitter. Amy, I know you have a podcast yourself, things like that. So let's just quick plugs, then tell us what you think about the event.
Sure. So I am Comms Ninja on the Twitters, my secret identity, and I podcast as one of the Geek Whispers. And when Greg's not looking, I try to get on Speaking in Tech.
Very cool. Okay, so what are your thoughts on DockerCon as a whole?
This is my first DockerCon, and it's been a really interesting experience to compare and contrast to OpenStack, which I'm only a couple of OpenStack summits in. And I think that's kind of the, that same sort of level of conference, and amount of attendees, et cetera. I'm part of the events team, so I look at it with that clinical eye. Great energy, really welcoming community. I think it's really well done. You can tell when a technology is on the rise because people want to be here and learn, and they're not just avoiding the sessions and saying they'll go see them later. So it's been a great place to be, very energizing.
Cool. Right, Chris, what are your thoughts? Actually, first, Chris, have you been to OpenStack Summit?
No. I've been to an OpenStack Day in the UK a long time ago, but not to an actual summit.
Okay, all right. So what do you think of the event as just in general, and maybe compare and contrast to something like EMC World, HP Discover?
Yeah, exactly. And that was a comparison I was going to make. I mean, those events are much bigger, obviously. You know, it's just the nature of what they are. And they're definitely more corporate. They're more structured that way. They're more talking about business issues and not necessarily focused on the technology as such, per se. They possibly don't have some of the lighter and more enjoyable and funnier things that were done. For instance, at the very beginning, before the keynote, there was a lot of humor in the little trailer that was running up on the screen. So there's a slightly more, a more casual attitude, shall we say, but that's the nature, I guess, of the sort of people who are attending and the type of event that it is in general.
So I know that some of us exchanged some comments, actually, with regards to the demos that were done this morning and the companies that were brought up on stage. Every one of the companies that was brought up on stage was cool, but was effectively a startup, right? I think one of you two guys made the comment, we could do with a company that's actually making a profit coming up and showing themselves on stage. Is that a reflection on the event, or do you think it has like a wider, it's painting a wider picture of the container ecosystem as a whole?
So yeah, I think I said that. And the reason I said it is because I think the people who presented were saying why they couldn't afford to use cloud, and of course that goes against where people have said we should use cloud because it's cheaper, and obviously for them, because they've got a product that has no money or makes no money, they needed to, you know, save costs. Now, it would be really useful to see not just a company that makes money, but a company that actually bets on something that uses containers that actually has income for them. Yep. So, you know, rather than just saying, well, we've got containers in use in production and that might mean, yeah, we use it for reports or we use it for back office or some of the things, who's actually using containers in production and betting their business on it?
What, like line of business applications,
yeah, and
things
that for a generates money business for the company.
Right.
Well, I think the other kind of interesting thing there is that it is it's a type of technology that has changed the industry overall. And I know that's not a money-making prospect, but I think that's something to observe. When you see a moment in time where some company has changed what happens and changed the conversation going forward, there's something that has to be observed about that and think about the ripple effect. And who's to say, I'm not going to bet for or against anybody, but sometimes the first person in that space isn't the one that necessarily profits the most, but somebody who comes in second, third, et cetera.
Yeah, and I think we're probably going to come to that maybe a little bit later. Julian, you've not given us your opinion on the conference yet, but feel free to weigh in on the conversation there as well.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm Julian Wood. I'm Julian _ Wood on the tweets, an independent IT consultant. This is my first DockerCon. I haven't been to an OpenStack summit before as well. And I'm finding it really interesting because I'm actually impressed with how advanced Docker is, even though it's really new and it's only, you know, 3 years old and that kind of thing. I particularly went to a Docker in the Enterprise session this afternoon where they were talking about their Docker data center product and a lot of the, you know, stable things that an enterprise needs, Active Directory stuff, role-based access control, and a whole bunch of stuff that was literally in there. And then there were some shocking things that were put up on the screen. Swisscom are planning on containerizing 90% of their applications. There was some other company that had taken 400 MongoDB VMs and squashed them into 400 containers running in 20 VMs, and they'd saved a whole bunch of resources and this kind of thing. So that seemed strange. I think the statistics, those statistics sounded impressive, but then on the converse side, this morning in the keynote, they say, 40 to 70% of enterprises. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Just a small gap in it.
But then the reality is, even if it is 70% of our enterprises are using Docker, it's still only 0.0000% of workloads. So, that figure is just ridiculous. But
sure. This
Swisscom thing for 90% of applications was, what? That sounded bizarre, but interesting.
I thought for a while that, you know, are we going to get to some kind of inflection point almost where it becomes a lot less talk and there literally are concrete examples of people using it out there. And I looked at the number this morning. I think they said at the beginning of the year, maybe something like January, that there'd been 1.5 billion pulls from Docker Hub. And here we are like 5 months later, whatever it is, and that's like over 4 billion. Now, I know there's lies, damn lies, and statistics, right? But we are going to get to some point, I'm sure, where those numbers actually materialize into, you know, I'm thinking is, are we going to wake up one morning and it's like, yeah, actually people really are deploying these in production, betting the business on them, line of business applications and what have you, and whether it's kind of creeping up on us, because I'm not massively seeing it in enterprises, right? I'll be perfectly honest, I'd like to see it. But then hearing things like that, and some of the conversations I've had with people as well, saying, you know, that they're working at financials and things, and they're looking to put almost line of business applications on containers. I was like, taking a double take at them.
I definitely think that is happening. The enterprise I work for is using containers in production. To be fair, it is monolithic vendor apps that they're containerizing just for the simplicity of deployment, because you know what? You don't need to speak to your old legacy Linux team and to get them to support and run another VM. And so that's not necessarily the idea of containers, but it's a start. And then, you know, once that happens, the whole DevOps movement and that big thing of trying to get microservices and splitting up your application into 1,000 different pieces, I don't think people are getting there yet, but they're going to get there.
So I don't speak because I think Chris will rip my head off if I don't give him the mic.
So I was trying to understand what you meant by those legacy what did you say?
Linux teams.
Yeah.
Well,
now,
this is one of the reasons that often enterprises are even looking at Docker is because they're finding that even to stand up a VM to do some kind of testing may take a day or take two. And if somebody wants to test code or just try something out, that day deployment time to build up a VM, stick it into the CMDB, log a remedy call, all this like dreary IT stuff. It's one of the things of shadow IT in IT departments is actually using containers because developers and ops people can just do it quicker.
What, to circumvent all of the change control and stuff?
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I sort of agree with you to a certain extent there, but I also disagree with you because, if you're doing that in production, yes, I think that certain companies want to have control over what gets deployed because it makes sense to, for lots of reasons. But you can build environments where you're building it out of VMs and have those built on demand through a DevOps type, development environment. There are lots of those out there. So I don't think it's necessarily the the legacy Linux teams or the legacy mainframe teams or the legacy Winix?
Winix, yeah,
Windows guys. That are the fault. I think it's the fact that people are too short-sighted to sit down and think, right, what do we need to build and what does it need to deliver? And then create an environment where something can be created on demand within a certain restricted scope.
Absolutely. And I think that's where enterprises want to get to, but they've got these, you know, a Windows or Linux support team is looking after workloads across the entire business. They've got some little team that is super into the DevOps and want to do stuff, but that Linux or Windows support team isn't quite ready yet to do the whole DevOps thing, yet this little super keen development team wants to iterate far faster. And yes, 100%, that is the wrong way to do it. That small development team need to be kicking the butts of the operations team of Linux and Windows to be able to get that continuous integration pipeline so they can do continuous deployment. But, you know, enterprises are slow with doing anything. Just because you can containerize something doesn't mean it's the right thing. We were worried about VM sprawl. I mean, can you imagine container sprawl when it's, you know, microseconds to set these up, and now you have 10,000 containers running, named with these long UIDs. Now that's just the next challenge of stuff to manage.
We'll be like VM sprawl.
Yeah.
Those are the easy days.
That's legacy VM sprawl to you.
Yeah.
No, I think it's the classic case of when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So human nature is you want to do it the most efficient way, but it doesn't mean that that's not heartburn for people who are trying to architect at a different level. So I think you said it exactly. I heard several people say today, it's about simplicity, but it's about hiding the complexity from the end customer. And I think that'll be an interesting next problem to solve, right? You solve one thing, it's a whack-a-mole. I don't know if that translates.
But okay, so I think we could talk about it all day, right? But I want to move the conversation on to the announcements that were made and what we think the impact of those announcements are. So for listeners who may not know the announcements, it's day one of DockerCon today, okay? Three major announcements this morning. Docker for Mac and Docker for Windows to try and make, it actually does make the developer experience really smooth. You know what? I don't care. I'm not a developer. Anybody here consider that? Chris, you're not a developer.
No, I know I'm not a developer, but that's not the point. I did have an opinion on it, and I looked at that and thought that was really neat for lots of reasons. So, first of all, they bypassed some of the need to run the environment within a VM. So previously they were using VirtualBox, and you had to deploy a VM, and it would run that, and then everything would be run behind the scenes in that. So you don't have to do that anymore, which is good. That's a good start. The key bit, I think, that they presented, which made it really interesting, was the fact that you don't have to spend hours and hours and hours building your environment with all the different tools that you would need. And although that's not necessarily a big deal, because if you go into a company, you do that once, the issue is that you could have lots of tools in lots of different levels and versions, and it could be very easy to get out of sync. And they mentioned one particular example on the stage where one container was out of whack and it got a different version, and that was an issue. So the ability to run the environment on your laptop or Windows machine and know that you're not having to worry about dependencies and all those other things that go with it, because all of that's built into what you're dragging down from the hub, is, I think, that's the powerful bit, you know, within that as well.
And it's exact same developer commands, whether you're running, you know, at enterprise scale with thousands of containers or 10 containers on your laptop, there is no difference.
And if we take it one step further as well, at least Chris and Julian and I have come from the Windows Server Container session, which is a slightly different thing. So Docker for Mac and Docker for Windows are for like laptops and things like that. Behind the scenes, it still does run inside of a VM, but you don't have to know or care or set that up. But on a Windows Server side of things, Docker is coming, native Docker containers running on top of the Windows kernel. Again, exactly the same commands, exactly the same, like, primitives and API calls and things like that. Very smooth, consistent experience. Starting to get kind of a decent story there together, I think.
Well, think of the power of that once you've gone from just deploying the individual containers and you go up to some orchestration level, be it Docker or some other third-party tool, in the past, there's no way you could have anything to do with Linux and Windows together. You can have an orchestration tool, and someone's built a microservice that happens to work well on an Alpine, CentOS, Ubuntu kind of thing, and someone else has written a .NET thing or a PowerShell thing that runs on Windows. You can literally have an automation level above that going, I need 10 Windows containers over there, I need 5 Linux containers over there on CentOS, I need 20 whatever, and to have the same management platform for Windows and Linux containers. Forget on-premises, off-premises, Azure, AWS, your laptop, the whole kind of thing. I mean, that's... it's sort of this thing that you can't believe we're heading there, because that sounds incredible.
And I guess you have to question, why would you think Microsoft would want to do that? Because in some respects, historically, they've been very focused on controlling the environment because they don't want to let you go off and wander off and do other things. But imagine now they've given you the ability to do exactly what you just said, Julian, where you can have multiple services, microservices built on the most appropriate platform, and you can mix and match. Now you're not going to be in that position where you go, well, I'm definitely not doing that on Windows because 90% of what I want to do, I can't do, but it's only 10% I want to do, so I'll have to do it on another platform. Now you can say, oh, yeah, well, for that 10% or 20%, we'll still carry on using Windows. So Windows will still have validity going forward because you've broken down what you want to do with it to just the pieces you need for it.
And I think that speaks to the market shift overall, is that that concept of locking in or banning something else has shifted. And the container theory, again, has, I think, shifted the way people think. And we're trained as consumers now, when you think about apps on whatever device you choose, you have certain expectations. And as much as people hate to talk about what consumer behavior does to drive enterprise, that's who we are, and those are the technologists, those are the people developing. We don't want less in our business environment than we have in our consumer environment. And that concept of being able to do what you want when you want at that micro level is just expected now.
I agree, but you know, I can't help but think that in a cloud-dominated world, in a world of like cloud-native apps, to use the buzzword, I still really think that Windows is going to struggle. I mean, we've come from that Windows Server Container session, and I think Server Core image was at, what, 9.3 gigabytes? And, okay, the Nano Server image is down to about 600 megabytes, but still, I mean, that's impressive, and well done, Microsoft, for doing that. But when you're looking for ultimate densities and things like that, if you're really wanting to maximize your bang for your buck out of Azure and Amazon Web Services and things, I just compared it to an Alpine Linux image, which I pulled during the session, 4.7 meg. So 600 megabytes, even for Windows Nano Server, is like just massively still too bloated. And
but you can't run Minesweeper on Windows.
but Chris, you noticed as well, didn't you? Within that Nano Server container, this like ultra stripped down container, there was a device in there /DOS devices/LPT1, printer.
There was still a printer in there.
Yeah.
Now the Alpine one's interesting because try and do anything with that image.
Appreciate.
You can't do anything with it. Like you'll have to download BusyBox and other things to use even the simplest of commands.
Appreciate.
However,
that.
It's an environment to run things in if you don't need to do anything else around it. So it does give you, you can build on it and put it.
But the same for Nano Server, right? If you're kind of very limited as to what you can do there, and the same applies, you know, you want to do more there, then that starts bloating as well.
Yeah, and you do wonder what is in 600 megabytes. If it is called Nano Server and all of
yes.
that stuff.
Well, his explanation was quite good, that, you know, Windows was built all about sharing DLLs. And so even though because there are just so many DLLs sharing kind of things, one little tiny system call happens to have a chain of 50 DLLs underneath it. You know, they haven't been able to strip down those individual DLLs, which is wrong. And to give kudos to him, he was an excellent presenter. He was
a
proper techie geek, and he was laughing at Microsoft for the way it was done, but no, there were valid reasons when they were done, and that'll change.
So we could talk about it again for all day. I'm going to move the conversation on, but before I do that, I want to do just a quick straw poll. Random question, right? Do we think that there will come a point in the foreseeable future where Microsoft says, you know what, we're going to abandon Windows? It's actually not worth the effort anymore in a cloud-dominated world where Linux is currently king. Do we think that they'll eventually get rid? Amy, and all I'm asking for here is a yes or no.
I can't just go yes or no on that. I think it's a two-part. I think they will maintain a legacy version, but I think that they're going to gain a lot of, they're going to shed a lot of weight if they basically clear-cut and do something new.
Okay, so here's let me rephrase the question. Do you think they would go with a Linux-first approach, Microsoft? Yes or no?
Chris,
no.
Julian? You can say no. The easy option now, Amy, is no. See, I can't even go yes or no myself. I'm going to say yes, just to be contrary. We can come back to that later down the line, okay? I want to move on to announcement number two. Was all about orchestration, right? So as of Docker 1.12, clustering is a first-class citizen in the Docker ecosystem, within Docker, right? So you can spin up a Docker cluster of 100 nodes, let's say, with all it would take is 101 commands. I know that sounds a lot, right? But it's effectively one command to create the cluster, and then one command on each of the 100 nodes to join that cluster. and you have suddenly got this pool of Docker nodes that you can then start throwing applications on. You can, you know, say, scale my application. Docker will take care of distributing it across the nodes and things like that. And my first opinion, and I'm going to pass the mic around, right, but was this is like potentially, and it could flop, right, but it's potentially massively powerful. Two commands, and you have got orchestration of a sort up and running. And that's like, for me, that seems game-changing. Please feel free to disagree. But when you compare it to things like Kubernetes and what have you, scalability and things like that are yet to be determined, okay, but massively simpler. And I was quite impressed by it.
Yeah, I agree. Incredibly simple. I know that, obviously, people will say, oh, it's one command, but, you know, you don't create swarms every day. So the one command thing sometimes I think is a bit overplayed. I think the key bit is what was going on behind the scenes. So all the security that was being managed. And I do believe, did they say that was a repeating key?
Right, okay, yeah. So that automatically sets up the TLS. So all communication between nodes in the swarm is encrypted via TLS. And then they also take care of the key rotation for you. The default is like they will rotate your keys every 90 days, but you can configure that yourself to whatever your corporate policy is. But like you say, Chris, all done for you behind the scenes. Now, I've configured Docker Swarm in the past to use TLS, and I am not kidding you. There were probably, in fact, I'll pull up one of the L commands and put it on the podcast website. It must have been like 5 lines long, the command, with probably 10 switches to the command. And you fat finger one of them, and it's like an hour to like, what have I done wrong here? So very powerful.
Yeah, and I've tried to do the same as well. And I sort of backed away from it. I mean, it wasn't my core piece of work to do like it is for you, Nigel. So I tried it, and then thought, oh, it's a bit clunky, so I think I'll leave that for a bit. But now I'd go back and try it, and, you know, I'd give it a go because it looks so much simpler. And that ability to just distribute that workload, spin up stuff the way that they did it. It looked really, really powerful, really, really good.
Definitely. I mean, I think that the orchestration, it's still going to be simplistic. You know, there isn't advanced scheduling of checking the CPU and memory of each individual container and moving things around and shutting them down and starting them up and resource hogs and everything. But, you know, if you're containerizing monolithic applications, this is not for you. This is you know, microservices where you now got a swarm of 100 hosts, and you're going to be, you know, starting a container to run a single credit card transaction for whatever. You know, you've now got 100 different places this can run, all monitored and managed. Yeah, it was amazingly simple. And, you know, Solomon Hikes, the founder of Docker, even before announcing this, started saying, the reason we're doing all of this is for that simplicity. And that was the building principle of it. It wasn't to create the swarm and everything. It was how can we do clustering really, really simply. And they, you know, started from that. Yeah,
nailed it.
Yep. So, yeah, just to add to that, I think you're right that it's not got a lot of advanced features that would manage some of the things that you might want to if you're looking at it like you would look at, say, a VMware environment. And some of those things I think are still necessary, and I'm sure they'll come. But what they've created is a framework. So they've created that environment into which they can now add those features. And they focused on the simplicity of the framework first rather than trying to think of all the features that needed to be in it. And now they
which
can add
the right
to those
way,
all the time, and they can improve it. And I think that's a much better approach.
And I think you do have to make a choice. There is that inherent slider bar between granularity and simplicity. And I always appreciate when people come down and for a reason on one side or the other, because I think when, to use that Harry Potter term, they sort of splinch and try to do both, then the parts end up in two places.
So I loved what Solomon actually said on stage when he was talking about, we have this, almost heritage in IT where something has to be really complicated before we think it's a real tool. You know, it's for adults, I think he made it, you know. Anything that's too simple, that can't be a real tool. And they had this picture, this like cartoon picture up on the big screen of this, I don't know, person holding a manual, and it was like one page, and it was like, just press button and works. And it's like, I kind of love that ethos. At DockerCon EU back in Barcelona at the end of last year, they did the very same thing around security, and they, you know, what they said around that was, I think actually they used the complex password as an example. They were saying, you know, so many systems will make you invent this really hard password that it's so hard you have to write it down and put it on your monitor, and it defeats the object. And they were saying about security, so often security, especially like TLS and stuff, is so hard, people are like, I'm not doing it. And there becomes a point where something's too hard, you just don't do it. So they're very much going for, let's just make something simple. And, you know, some security is better than none, right? And, okay, this conversation is not about security, right? But when it comes to orchestration and what have you, some orchestration that is simple to spin up and manage and what have you is far better than none, just because it's too hard to do.
The difficulty, what is going to happen is, because Docker is still so young and it's still very much open source and they're not making literally any money, is as soon as they do start making money from enterprises, and enterprises who are spending money with Docker saying, oh, we want this little feature, and oh, we want this little feature. And in order to get that money in, they're going to create more features, and unfortunately, it's always very difficult in product development to say to an enterprise, no, we're not going to do that feature,
yeah,
because it's going to make you money.
But the difference between Netscape and ARPANET is broad, right? When I think back, when you talk about that simplicity to you know complexity,
yeah,
and that's the interesting thing, right? Those are the conversations we'll continue to have. Which business chooses where in that spectrum, and where they choose, it's a very important business objective. And to your point, we had that conversation about Microsoft. You know, they chose, just taking it at the PC level, they took a very particular approach where they wanted to be inclusive and write to every app, be very inclusive this whole time, and have created a lot of bulk. Whereas, you know, Apple took the approach of, you know, forget you, throw your hardware out every couple years, you know, throw in the landfill, we're going to go to this new operating system, there is no retroactive. And so I think we've seen that classic war between those two ways. That's how businesses are won and lost, and there's a lot of room in between.
And that's why we're in DLL hell. Do you remember
yeah,
DLL hell?
Yeah.
And have you ever looked at the SXS directory on Windows? Of all the that's all the DLLs.
The cache of
DLLs.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Anything that's ever installed any DLL, and it keeps every single one so that it can keep track of which app had access to which one, and that can be huge.
Gigabytes.
It can be
and
gigabytes.
And that's not shared.
Yeah.
You can't even put it on a file share.
No, you can't. No, it's a local directory. So, yeah, architecture-wise, there are interesting choices that vendors have made over the years.
But then Microsoft did that because they created this ecosystem that a million developers could write code for it, which made it ubiquitous that every enterprise, every home user bought a Windows PC because everyone else was writing apps for it, because it was this open thing that people could write rubbish for.
Okay, so tying into the last announcement, the third announcement from day one at DockerCon, was Docker for Amazon Web Services and Docker for Microsoft Azure, which is effectively just, again, an uber simple way to spin up a cluster, a Docker swarm on Azure or on Amazon Web Services. Literally a few clicks, you choose how many managers you want, how many nodes, it goes away, spins it all up for you. Again, like we said, all about simplifying, all about making that onboarding experience easier for people. Don't know if any of you have any comments on that.
Oh, it's a continuation of what we were talking about before. Create cluster, put it on Amazon, put half of it on Amazon, put half of it on Azure. I mean, that again is going to be super powerful. And I think that's just the base platform. People are going to be writing functions on top of containers that you're going to have, you know, Asia's going to wake up in the morning and your shopping day starts in Asia, and you're just going to be add 50,000 or add 50 containers to my AWS region in Asia. That's going to spin to have, you know, a quicker network time for people who are buying stuff there. And then as the time of the day swifts around, you're going to spin up containers in the US because they're now shopping. And you think, that is just, it's literally that simple to move stuff around the world and deploy anywhere from your laptop to the cloud.
So the only thing with that is we have that issue with data still. We have an issue with data moving it around that hasn't really been sorted. But in terms of the ability to use public cloud for stuff, that's really, really, really neat.
Cool. Okay, so let's wrap things up, right? This is my second DockerCon, but my first DockerCon back in Barcelona, one of the things that really, really jumped out to me, I think, was the excitement and the vibe and the buzz around the ecosystem. As you walked around the show floor, it was like, I don't want to be harsh here, right, but at DockerCon in Barcelona, the week after that, I went to HP Discover. And look, I'm going to caveat this by saying that I do appreciate that HP Discover is full of people that have deep pockets and spend money and, you know, come from organizations that turn a profit and stuff like that. I'm not having a pop at HP Discover, but, you know, to wander around the floor at HP Discover is like pulling your own teeth out. It's like painful. And whereas you walk around the floor here, and probably no doubt at OpenStack Summit and places, there's a buzz, there's a vibe. The people that are on like booth duty are quite often the founder of the company or like the lead engineer. And, you know, there's something about it. So let's just talk about the ecosystem a little bit. I know, Chris, you had some comments that you wanted to make.
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think you've just got to bear in mind that Calvin's now going to be sticking pins into a little voodoo doll of you after all those comments, if he's even listening.
But HPE is slightly different because they are their own ecosystem.
They
do everything. So yeah, that is also different.
Yeah, it is true. So I think we were seeing a number of different things. So we're seeing some bigger vendors turning up and wanting to be part of it. So the Cisco stand looked like, you know, it was like tumbleweed going past every time I walked past that one. Couldn't work out why they were there.
But you walk in and the first three people are IBM, Cisco and Microsoft.
Yes.
And I mean, Microsoft, you know, is doing huge amounts, but literally IBM and Cisco are in the front.
Yeah.
But everybody
it's a sign they know they need to be there. Again,
they do.
Yeah.
So I couldn't quite see what Cisco were doing. However, there's quite a number of storage companies here, all trying to come up with solutions to fixing that problem. There's traditional storage companies. I can talk to that, I guess, in a second, Amy. But then there's other companies looking at things like their own versions of orchestration, security. Mm-hmm. So there's an ecosystem building up around it, which obviously happens with these sort of products that create a buzz and create a whole sort of marketplace. Now, whether they'll all be around in 12 months' time,
fascinating to see.
Turn up to DockerCon 2017, or whether it'll be a different group, who knows? But at least they're creating ideas, they're creating things, and that's that vibe we were talking about. That's, you know, into the whole thing.
It's so young, isn't it? It's like, it's, this is going to be so corny. I've just thought of it. It very much is like springtime in the container ecosystem, isn't it? Everything's new and budding and flowering and the bees are buzzing. But no, it's a great analogy. Well, I think it's a great analogy.
But I think the interesting thing about the container environment and ecosystem is that Docker is creating it by being Docker, but it's not actually creating why people are wanting containers. That's the whole DevOps movement. And if you take us back 10 years ago with VMware, there wasn't actually a use case that, we need to VM all our stuff. VMware just came out with this thing that on day one saved you money because you could share hardware. And that was a sort of groundswell of, wow, this is fantastic. Then obviously that ecosystem built out. But this is a very different thing where there is actually a use case before Docker even existed. We want to be Facebook, Amazon, Netflix and do all these kind of things and do microservices. We need a tool to do that. And then, out of thin air, Docker comes and, you know, in a way the solution to the problem you had. So, it's different. But all these ecosystem players, it's amazing. The monitoring stuff that's going on when, you know, containers are spinning up and down in microseconds, you know, that's a whole different paradigm for the ecosystem.
Well, and I, you know, having worked at a variety of companies of variety of size, I think what's interesting is that it becomes a level playing field in a new environment like this. So some companies will solve problems that will knock out other companies. Some people will create problems that will spin into three new companies. And we're going to see something wildly different, like you said, in 2017. And we're going to see people come in and play. But just because you have more money than someone else, it might not make you the most popular stand. It's just going to be, it's very interesting to watch the social hive of it, if you will.
Is there going to be a difference? I was just thinking, comparing DockerCon and Docker to OpenStack, because a couple of years ago, OpenStack's going to be the future. Everything's going to be running on OpenStack, and you know, a whole bunch of vendors jumped on and all did that kind of thing, and that hasn't quite panned out in the same way.
But I think
way.
It's going to. I'm coming around to the fact that I think it might, because I was not a believer in that for a while, but now I'm starting to see the tide turn there.
Well, and just to, you were talking about VMworld, it shows my age, I suppose, but at a time I came into VMworld when things were still very...
When it was spring, and now it's winter.
And it changes, and I think people who are, and it is absolutely no knock on VMware, but everybody matures, and how you mature, it's how gracefully you do it at a certain point, because everybody changes, and that energy changes, and I don't know if anybody here ever thought we'd say a day when, you know, VMware was not the new kid on the block, because I think they were for so long, but tech time changes. There's like a sliding bar of it, isn't there? Where 2 years might have been a long time previously. Now 1 year is a long time, and then it'll be 6 months. I mean, it's a
the world is turning fast. I just want to comment to my comment on it's winter time in VMworld, right? I will you know, hold my hand up and say VMware is a fantastically successful company, and wouldn't Docker Inc. love to be as successful as them and all of the other companies that are out on the floor there. So yes, while I do think it's not springtime in that ecosystem, it's not, you know, I'm not having a bash at them. They are fantastically successful.
So I think Pat Gelsinger will be borrowing voodoo doll from Calvin.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, but it's how you behave in your time of life. Right?
Yes, it is, it is.
So one thing on the OpenStack side of things, I think if you look back 18 months, 2 years ago, you might have said OpenStack was where things might go. But things are changing already. So look at all the hyperconverged players that are now trying to put their own hypervisor in and mm-hmm. make the hypervisor irrelevant.
Yeah.
And then you've got things like Platform 9, which can sit and manage. They had an announcement today, didn't they?
Kubernetes as well, yeah. Manage Kubernetes.
So there's a lot of other things that are coming in to fragment that market up.
Yeah.
So OpenStack sits at that higher end still and probably will for a long time. There's a very good chance that things like Docker and other things will grab that lower and middle ground, perhaps. And OpenStack might get relegated only to very big companies simply because there's other simpler solutions.
It's so hard still
and,
OpenStack.
And I think containers are still not applications themselves. You look at AWS Lambda and Google Functions and Azure Functions. They're going to just abstract containers to as irrelevant as a
unikernel
machine
as well.
Or a unikernel or whatever. So, yeah, we're, you know, obviously being at DockerKernel.con, it's all the buzz of that. But, you know, literally give it 2 or 3 years, the container can be the invisible part that is boring and nobody cares. I don't know what that says about Docker Inc. in terms of making money. That's a question for 100 hours of
that
podcast.
That absolutely is a question, yeah.
But, yeah, that whole functions as a service, serverless, Jeff, whatever you want to call it, that's going to happen really, really quickly because that's the least barrier to a developer writing code.
Well, and it's back to there is no total collapse of this market. There's just change. We're in an industry where you have to love learning. You have to be always curious. Because if you love the past and hold on so tightly to it, you'll be a historian and not an active part of the future. And as I hear you talk, I just keep thinking of that. You know, there is this energy and buzz because there is something new, but there'll always be something new and it'll change something else. And that's the cool part about this industry.
So there's nothing wrong with the past as long as it's the mainframe.
And you know what? On that, I think we're going to wrap the show. So thank you, guys. I'm going to go around left to right again one more time. Make sure you all get your Twitter handles and things in because I think Mr. Evans might have forgotten first time around. Did you?
I didn't get asked.
That's because I'm the worst podcast host in the world. So, Amy, thanks for being on. Just remind us where you are and who you are.
I am at Comms Ninja and found at the Geek Whisperers podcasting.
Very cool. Chris?
Yeah, I'm at Chris M. Evans and blog.architecting.it.
I'm at Julian_Wood and wooditwork.com on the webs.
And I am Nigel.
Oh.